So welcome back to Pax Europiana, the podcast about peace in Europe. We are now in the sections about EU days, and now it's for the 8th of February. The 8th of February 1955 was the day when the Soviet Union foreign minister, Minister Molotov, he has announced the Austrian neutrality to be possible and to be the wish of the Soviet Union. Now you will ask me, oh, Günther, why should that be an EU day? And why was it the Soviet Union announcing Austrian neutrality? And why is Austria not in NATO? And all this I will now explain in this podcast. Let me start with, of course, you know, the fundament of everything is the most terrible Second World War and all the crimes and atrocities. Austria, since 1938, was part of the Nazi Empire after the annexation of Austria, the so-called Anschluss. It was a terrible crime to attack another country, but it happened like this. There was next to no international outcry about it, and it was very dramatic. There was about a third of the Austrian population in favor. There was about a third of the Austrian population vehemently against, and there was also a third which was passively watching events beyond their power to roll out. But sadly enough, Austria was very complicit in the crimes. Austria was then fully integrated in the German Empire, and also many Austrians were perpetrator in the Holocaust, in the war crimes of the German army, in the political system of the Nazi Party, and it's really a big tragedy and a big criminal story. Never forget, the Nazis were not only a criminal enterprise and a genocidal regime, but also in many ways based on theft, criminality, murder, and all these terrible things. Anyhow, that was the Second World War. It's well known, well documented. What is less well known is the reason why Austria is a neutral country today, and that I want to explain. And basically, the American army from the West and from the South, of course with the British allies, but mainly it was the American army, and here especially General Patton with his huge force coming over the Rhine after the landing in Normandy, and then moving down south eastwards and towards Bavaria, and then crossing into Austria and also into Czech Republic, what is today Czech Republic, and then basically coming to standstill at the River Enns, while on the other side the Soviets were coming and bent to liberate Vienna, Prague, and Berlin. And obviously the two major, huge forces, they had to meet somewhere in the center of Europe, the Americans from the West, the Russians from the East, and obviously Austria, in a way, is the center of Europe in that sense, when you see it from the power centers, Washington and Moscow, and here the two armies met, and Austria was divided accordingly. There were a number of agreements, and a lot of discussion where exactly, and there was of course Truman was in power, Eisenhower was in charge, and there was already an extremely itchy relationship between the West and the Soviets, and obviously everybody tried really to avoid any kind of escalation, that for example there will be fire between the Allies. So it was that the West especially tried to fulfill Stalin's wishes. And he wanted to have the big Central European capital. Obviously, the most important was Berlin. And so the Soviets got Berlin. Of course, they had to liberate it first. But it was a terrible battle for Berlin. It was also a terrible battle for Vienna, actually. But Vienna was less destroyed than Berlin. So in a short nutshell, basically, the fronts came to a stabilization point. And Austria was divided along the Danube and the Enns River. In geography terms, you can imagine Western Austria with the Western Allies, Eastern Austria with the Eastern Allies, with the Soviet Union. It was a little bit shifted, the line, during negotiations in the summer of 45. Basically, the northern part of north of the Danube, it was also added to the Soviets. They found it wise because of the Danube to be a strong demarcation line between the Americans and the Soviets. Actually, the Soviets found it wise. It actually, the American leadership, the political leadership found it wise. But General Patton, he is on record to completely be against it, because he wanted to liberate Prague, He wanted to liberate the Czech Republic. He, of course, understood that this was very important because the Czech Republic is a big industrial asset and a very rich area. He didn't want to leave that with the Soviets because he already understood that where the Soviets are, they won't budge, so they won't move again. So it's extremely complicated once the line was settled to get any Soviet territory back to the free world. Yeah? Patton was very clear and visible. That was also the reason why he was removed from power in Bavaria, because in that phase between the victory moment on the 8th of May until the real start of the Cold War, basically in 1947, there was the major effort to bring the boys back home from the Americans and also to have no kind of continuation of warfare. And the idea was basically that now there is peace in Europe. But that was, of course, taking another 45 years until that happened. So, and now the question is, what happened with Austria? So it was divided, and it was very problematic in the Austrian case, because in the German case, two-thirds of Germany was with the West, and there was only the main thing was the Berlin, this big capital, but the rest of the Soviet-occupied Eastern Germany was mainly agricultural and normal land without a lot of important industrial assets. This was all in Western and in the Allied Germany. In the case of Austria, it was very different, because the richer parts of Austria are basically the areas around Vienna. There is this flat fields and the industrial areas which were developed, and only Linz and the southern Linz and the area around Graz, they were just minor, important industrial centers, but not really very functional without the rest of the industrial core of Austria. And also in between were the huge mountains. And basically you have this area around Linz, and then you have the area around Graz, and the rest of Austria is huge Alps, basically. Today, still, Austria is two-thirds of an Alpine territory. So it was not really very sustainable to work in economic terms, and also in political terms. It was Austria was already this huge capital, and then all the area which is called Lower Austria, parts of Upper Austria, the Burgenland, this was a much more significant occupation, which it turned out, by the Soviets. And also they took and stole all the Austrian assets they could mobilize, everything which was not difficult to demontage, and they took to the Soviet Union in these first years. Yeah. Anyhow, so it was, and that was basically the reason why Austria was divided. And now what happened then? Obviously, there was in the beginning, and I want to mention also, the American general next to Patton, who is a real Austrian-American hero, and we have to really thank him very much. I'm very sorry that there is no Patton Museum in Austria, but there should be one. And also there's General Mark Clark. He was then the chief commander, the supreme Allied commander of the American forces in Austria, and he basically defended Western Austria, and he really helped to avoid a communist takeover. And he also defended Austria, and he somehow talked, he was tough, and he is really one of the reasons Austria survived these difficult days. Then it's also the year 48, obviously, and then there was the takeover in Czechoslovakia, and step by step the Soviets took control of all Eastern Europe, and they made communist coups in each of the countries, and also in Austria they tried it. But it took a bit longer, and it was not so well organized, because there's two things, three important issues why Austria didn't become a communist country. First of all, about half of Austria was with the American army. So that was important. And also Vienna was divided in four quarters, and three quarters of Vienna, or basically half of Vienna physically, was basically with the Western army and with the Western generals, with American generals. So it was not so easy like in the Czechoslovak Republic, where complete Soviet control was established militarily already, or in Hungary, or everywhere else in the Eastern Europe. So in Austria, it was also then, it was a bit delayed, and it was also then in the starting already the Korea War. And the Korea War in 1950 in June was in full escalation, when then later the Americans tried to stabilize also Austria. And then there was a communist coup. But in Austria, this is important to understand, that the Austrian people really didn't want communist control. And also the Soviets were lukewarm to start another war in Western Europe when they had already this huge Korea War on hand. And the idea was basically to win first in Korea and then later start a new confrontation in Europe and not to have a two-front war. I think that was Stalin was too much. So there was not a lot of support. And I also want to mention that the Austrian Social Democrats, they are not the easy guys to roll over. It is also, it's maybe going too deep in the origin of European socialist movements, but all these people in the socialist movement, they knew each other because they were already fighting about ideological directions in the 20s, in the 10s, yeah, in the whole century already. There was a huge debate for the direction of the left-wing movement in Europe. And the Austrian Social Democrats, they had their own tradition of, they had their own ideological roots. They, of course, knew very much the German Social Democrats. And don't forget, there was a big civil war in Germany between basically the Soviet-backed groups and the German Social Democrats from 1919 to 1923, 24 almost. And only when Lenin died, Stalin had then to consolidate power, he had less interest. But obviously all this is now forgotten knowledge in a way, but all this was very present for every socialist decision maker who was in the Austrian government. They all knew exactly what could happen and what was the intention of the communists. They had no illusions and they were not easy guys to roll over. And here was especially also the Americans were so ready to support. And this was basically a coup, which is now for some bizarre reasons always named after the guy who has suppressed it. He is called Ola, and he was the Social Democrat trade union leader, and he basically armed his trade unionists, which were in the democratic Social Democratic tradition and in the Austrian Social Democratic tradition, and they got armed, possibly with the help of the Americans, and then they had also the information exactly what's going on, and they cracked down very hard against the communist coup in 1950, and that was successful. And since then, they also had a kind of a militia in order to be attentive. And also then, from that moment onwards, the communists didn't try another takeover. Also, the war in Korea was going very badly. And also then, in 53, Stalin died. And in 52, he was already a bit ill and he was a bit shaken by this defeat in Korea. And so ultimately, there was already this kind of emerging power struggle in the Soviet Union. So Austria was very lucky to escape a communist takeover in the year 1950. And thanks a lot to the Austrian Social Democrats for saving Austria. But most of all, thanks a lot for America for saving Austria from a similar destiny like it was in the Czechoslovak Republic, which was for so long, for 45 years, in Hungary, 45 years under Soviet domination. So how it happened then? It was, of course, the Korea War was over. Stalin was still alive in 52, and he had to do some initiatives. And he had this strategy of a so-called neutral belt. And that was the idea from Sweden, Finland, down, a neutralized Germany, a neutralized Austria, a neutralized, he hoped that there might be some reconciliation or whatever change in government in Yugoslavia, but to have that neutralized as well. And then there was still Greece in a very complicated situation. And obviously the Americans were also having their strategy with the Truman Foundation, Truman Doctrine, with the NATO Foundation, getting Greece and Turkey into NATO, and also buying Tito into compliance with 51, this kind of a security directive to fund Tito. Whenever he was a socialist client state, he was a client state of America since 51. And obviously what to do about Austria. And Stalin's plan was the so-called, it's famous in history, the Stalin Notes. And what is the Stalin Notes basically about? Is to propose neutrality for Germany and for Austria. And that was basically one package. And these were the former enemy states. And what to do with them was a big question, because to leave them like this was obviously very controversial. And don't forget all the things which happened already with the Berlin airlift, with the German currency reform, with all these major dramatic events from the year 48, 49 and so on. And these were very dramatic. And obviously, so the resolve changed in the West after the Korea War. Nobody had any intentions or kind of illusions about Soviet intentions anymore. And the Americans were not ready to let another country fall. So Stalin tried it with neutrality. Obviously, here is the deal always. Understand it completely. Neutrality for unity. So he had Eastern Germany and the capital Berlin. And he offered and this deal that there will be unity of Germany. But Germany cannot join the Western alliance, not join NATO, not to be rearmed, but a neutral Germany. And that was, of course, you know, very dangerous for the West, because it would have meant maybe one day there will be an alliance with this neutral Germany with the Eastern Bloc, or it will be internally so divided that it might be somehow opting for the East again. And for sure, it would have been lost for Western German military defense. But also this whole miracle of economic reform might have been endangered. That was very dangerous, obviously. And it didn't happen, luckily, because the Germans decided in, or the Americans basically decided to not let it happen. And it was in the so-called Paris and London agreements. And basically there, it was decided that Western Germany will be allowed in NATO against the French resistance. It took the Americans certainly a lot of money and a lot of pressure to allow Germany, only 10 years after the Second World War and all the crimes and horrors of that, to be rearmed again. Now today nobody talks about German rearmament, but that was the term which was used. And that was it basically about sovereignty of Western Germany, arms for Western Germany, a full military alliance membership in 55, and that also happened. Now, and how did the Soviets reacted on that? They, of course, were furious. They didn't want that to happen. There was also a power struggle in the post-Stalin world there. And so they had then this plan to decouple the Austrian situation and the German situation and to show to the Americans, and basically it was not the Americans because that was impossible, but to the Western German political world, that compliance with Soviet wishes results in unity. And that it's possible for the Soviets to leave one country which they occupy, Eastern Austria. So basically the whole idea was, we make a test balloon of Austria, the Soviets leave this country, unity will be achieved, and we tell it to the Western Germans, look, you are American proxies, you do what America wants, and that's why you are not united. Basically, they said to Adenauer, you are betraying the Eastern Germans and you're giving up your ancient capital and just for being an American proxy. That was the accusation also of the West. It was very rough. Adenauer always said that it is basically an international socialist scandal, this Austrian neutrality. And you can read that. It's a famous quote. And here also, I would like to remind you that from the start, the whole system in Germany started totally different because the Americans basically took Adenauer out of retirement because he was the mayor of Cologne before. And they came to his pension home, to his house, and had already the plan to install him as the chancellor. While in Austria, it worked totally different because Stalin had already post-war plans for Austria. And he found Renner, who was the president of the First Republic, the founding president of the First Republic. And so in the Soviet eyes, it was really very logical to have him as the founding president of the Second Republic as well. And obviously it brought a lot of legitimacy because he created already the First Republic. So he was allowed to create the Second Republic. He was one of the leading socialists. So you see also how from the beginning, the post-war order was organized differently by the Soviets and by the Americans, simply Austria much further to the east and so easier to reach for the Soviet forces. Anyhow, I digress now. I was already in 55, and so it's not a coincidence that on the 5th of May, 1955, there was NATO membership of Western Germany. On just 10 days later, on the 15th of May, there was the Austrian Neutrality Declaration. And that means this famous moment, Austria is free, in the Belvedere, in this famous Austrian castle of Prince Eugen. And it was then declared this Austrian neutrality as the price for unity. I call it a dirty deal, but I would like always to explain that at that time, back then, that was the best available option for Austria, because Austria is like a huge, gigantic block into in the Eastern Europe, and with Eastern Europe already going communist, the alternative would have been that the Cold War Iron Curtain directly stays between Austria. And in the specific Austrian geography, that would have been very complicated to sustain economically with a very small country. And it would have been also possible, I think, but it was not the way it was to be. Because why? Because in the Austrian case, it was in the Soviets basically deciding that they want that. And they want it very much. And they even made kind of favorable conditions on, you know, real neutrality and no Soviet soldiers in Austrian soil. And that was in a way too attractive. And they made a very attractive offer in order to win the German case, yeah? Not to make anything nice to Austria, but also for them, Austria was more a burden than something great to have, because the Vienna was anyhow divided in four, and the rest of the territory they had already taken everything, everybody who they didn't like, because they also kidnapped a lot of people and brought them to Siberia, most of them not to return, but also a lot of goods and industrial installation, they were already gone. And so they invited a delegation of Austrian politicians to Moscow. And then there was a big negotiation in April 55. And then there was this famous mood, you know, that the Austrian politicians, Figl and Raab, they were basically so charming. They were singing for the Soviet generals. And basically they were drinking vodka more than the Soviet generals. That's all, you know, that's very much the myth and the nostalgia and the narrative that the Austrians told, that this was basically such a wonderful, charming Austrian diplomacy initiative that led to a change of hearts in the with the Soviets, because they couldn't resist and the Austrians were drinking more than them. I have no doubt that they were all drinking a lot, because the Austrians were also wine farmers. And the main personalities of that time, the prime minister and the foreign minister, Raab and Figl, and they are really great personalities. They are great heroes. They have also been tortured by the Nazis in the concentration camps, and they are great Austrian personalities, and they managed to get this deal. And anybody can only be happy that the Soviets left. But obviously, the price for that was neutrality. It didn't very much matter for Austria, but it was a complicated deal to digest for the Western allies. But anyhow, so it was. And it had huge repercussions. Yeah? Not so much for the Austrians, because we got rid of the Soviets, but immediately also because Austria and Hungary, we were together in for centuries, basically, with different parts of Hungary for five centuries, and for different parts longer, but I digress now. But basically, the Hungarians very much knew what is happening in Vienna. They saw the Soviets moving out. And even the socialists in Hungary were not too keen to have all these Soviet occupation forces. And then came this so-called Budapest uprising and the October events and this terrible suppression by Soviet tanks of the Hungarian revolutionaries or pro-freedom activists. And the West doing basically nothing for them, because also it was impossible. The Soviets have seen once they move somewhere, there can't be a chain reaction, because also the Hungarians wanted to be free of Soviet suppression. And so basically then from that moment, the Soviets cracked down very hard. And it was a big tragedy. Austria at that time, that has to be said, was very open for the Hungarian refugees, and hundreds and thousands fled to Austria. And we helped on the Austrian state and the population. Many have stayed in Austria, many have left to America and Australia, but it was a terrible tragedy. And it was directly the result of Austrian neutrality, because we were so lucky. The Hungarians wanted the same. They would have had so happy for neutrality. And in many ways, neutrality was also what was agreed in Yalta. Don't forget that it was not a complete Hungary which was agreed between this famous percentage deal. There was a kind of, I think it was 60-40 for Hungary. So neutrality would have been an option according to Stalin, but it was not an option to his insecure successors, and they cracked down very hard on the poor Hungarians. So they are very much the first victims of the Austrian neutrality deal, which was nice for us, but not so nice for the Hungarians. Yeah? Anyhow, so it was in 56, and then the Austrian reality was that this myth in the Cold War was, of course, useful, and the Austrian kept it somehow alive, this bargain, and trying to survive and not to be too much into the limelight, and Austria somehow developed their own survival myth that neutrality was our wish, that we always wanted to be neutral, that we are the bridge between the East and West, and that we are basically the chosen people of peace in the middle of Europe. It was also a convenient excuse for starting a lot of energy business with the Russians, with the Soviet bloc, and trying to be kind of a neutral spy hub and a lot of money laundering. And that's basically all going on up until today, unfortunately. And it had very negative effects on the Austrian character, the political world. We had a lot of politicians on the payroll of the Hungarian or the, especially the Czech secret services. And this was all very dramatic and very negative. And Austria in many ways has developed some kind of North Yugoslavian economic mixed system with all these state enterprises, which were then first nationalized either by the Austrian government or by the Soviet occupation authorities. And that was all then nationalized back in Austria after the state treaty. And then we have developed all this messy kind of corporate Austria, which we have to this day, unfortunately. And I made a separate podcast about that one on the 4th of February. Yes, and then it happened, obviously, the tragic events of the next crackdown of the Soviets in 68. That was shaking Austria in the fundament because it's the neighboring country to the north. The Austrian tried everything because nobody knew where the Russian tanks will stop. Yeah? So it was very dramatic. And a lot of Austrians were mobilized, but always very far from the border, very low level. All the journalists were ordered not to write anything aggressive against the Soviets. Yeah, and you know, the whole country in 68 in the summer went into some kind of a total hiding, a bunker mentality, because it was really dramatic. And who knows, maybe it could have gone totally wrong. It certainly went totally wrong for the Czechoslovak spring. And it was a very big tragedy. It led, obviously, then also to shock and some other events. They led that Kreisky won in 1970. Kreisky was the leading star of the Austrian left since the Second World War. He himself also being a resistance fighter and the opposition person to the Nazi. He is, without doubt, a great European personality. But in the 70s, he developed their own myth about himself, Austrian neutrality. And I will make a separate podcast about Kreisky, Palme and Brandt during the 70s, annoying the Americans and playing their kind of Central European neutrality card in a kind of very specific and negative way in the 1970s. Yeah. And that basically we survived somehow. We got richer because economically we were part of the Western world. Austria was a democracy, no doubt. And we were just at this border and we somehow were basically with a hard currency policy pegged first to the dollar and then to the German mark, and also economically in the European Free Trade Agreements in 60, we somehow managed relatively well for this kind of terrible context of this basically frozen Cold War in Central Europe. That came all to an end in the year 89 with the Gate of Freedom, with the Eastern Germans running away from from Eastern German suppression, and also then the Eastern Bloc falling. And now I ask you why we didn't join NATO exactly back then. Yeah, that's a question. One moment. That's a question basically to answer in a separate podcast. But in basically our compromise was because the Austrian left, they really believed very much in this Kreisky myth of neutrality, the bridge of peace between the East and West. So this has been basically perpetuated and being a kind of a self-evolving, independent vision of Austria. And so joining NATO was basically not possible with the Austrian left, yeah, at that moment in 1990. So then what was lucky, the moment that Alois Mock, he managed to have the new state, Russia, in 92, not to be the successor nation in the Austrian state treaty, at least. So the option for joining NATO is there. And I call for that, obviously. Austria should join NATO, there is no doubt. But it seems to have been taking the last 30 years. It was impossible. Because why? Because basically the political situation and the media and the public is not endorsing that at the moment. Because why? Because most of the leading parties either are anti-American, that is a broad consensus in Austria, as you can see from the 2006 visit of George Bush. But you can also see that the left is still very nostalgia and kind of thinking about Russia, the bridge to the East and West, and, you know, don't provoke the Russians. But this whole 50 years of neutrality has led now to this kind of self-perpetuating myth. And that's the problem here. You have the Green with a lot of anti-Americanism and also a lot of left-wing ideas about NATO being the alliance of war. And that's all very unfortunate in a European Union where 93% of all citizens are actually NATO citizens as well. And we have a mutual assistance clause in EU. So basically, we're anyhow allied with all NATO members. So I cannot understand. Obviously, the Austrian populists of the more extreme rights, they are anyhow funded by Putin and they are the Putin friends. I call them the friends of Putin in Austria. And it's only the liberals of the new party, which is a reasonable pro-American party, which maybe one day will hopefully be for NATO membership of Austria. But it's basically the only group. And so we are in the situation we are. Basically, the dream of Stalin of a neutral belt has been fulfilled. We have still this neutral Austria in the heart of Europe. We still have neutral Sweden. We have still a Serbia which is pro-Russian, and it's really complicated, unfortunately, and it's time to change it. It's time to have for more solidarity. I mean, Stalin may not win, and all this neutrality myth of Austria being the chosen people of peace and the bridge to Russia, not even the Russians take it serious. Yeah? But in Austria, unfortunately, it's still the number one philosophy, unfortunately. And I tried to show with this little podcast here how it really was, why it happened that we became neutral. And it was good back then, but it is not good now because alliances are for the future. And we are a European Union member state. We should be solidaric with all other European Union member states. And with the exemption of all these post-Cold War issues, this legacy of the Cold War in Finland, Sweden, and also of some Cyprus and Malta and Ireland, everybody is in NATO. So it's time for Austria to fulfill its journey towards the West and complete our integration into the Western Alliance, to be fully responsible adult in the room and not to be the country always promoting Russian position, being for Nord Stream 2, being the hub of Russian money laundering, having every year another scandal where one internal security apparatus person of Austria from the Secret Service or Ministry of Interior or military is caught with a huge spy scandal to work for the Russians. Every year we have this scandal. Again and again they are bought or work for internal moral reasons for the Russians. It's a big scandal. And we have a problem here. And it has to be fixed because Stalin may not win. And this Molotov day of the 8th of February may always be the reminder that Austrian neutrality is an idea of Molotov as a response to undermine German Western integration. In the core of it, that's what it is. It was meant to block and to make it more difficult for Adenauer to lead Germany into NATO. And then the Soviets said, we will make it very painful for Adenauer and we will make something in Austria which will be used against him and was used against him by the opposition social democrats in Germany in the year 55 because they very much used the Austrian model of neutrality and unity as a counter position towards Western integration of Western Germany. And that's quite a shameful thing. And we should now at least, you know, in 2020s, we should get serious and join NATO. Austria, I call on Austria, please join NATO. And President Joe Biden, please invite Austria to join the great alliance of freedom and values. And that's basically what we should do. I hope so. Thanks a lot.